You will go ahead and open up to Acts chapter 20. We'll be by there in just a second. You know, I think that it's safe to say that every one of us throughout our lives have, at one point or another in our spiritual walk, been discouraged or disappointed at some point or another. You know, those times is typically we see people say, well, just keep your chin up, keep your head up. But you know, sometimes it's not just that simple as words. We need to be encouraging one another to continue on from day to day. But sometimes it's a little hard to keep on trucking, if you will, to keep steadfastly every day. In Acts chapter 19, right before what we're going to be talking about this morning, we see Paul is in Ephesus. And he spent over 2 years there pouring out himself and the scriptures to these people. And he developed a great relationship with them and did a lot of things for them. And along the way, no doubt, he had many successes spiritually. But he also had his times of disappointment, his discouragement as well. But we don't see him giving up. We see him continuing on steadfastly day by day by day. Here in Acts chapter 19, we see that it's gotten to the point, as he's taught against idolatry, that, again, Demetrius the silversmith, remember him? He got everybody upset and got the mob created, and everybody's angry because it's messing with their livelihood. And so they're out there trying to kill Paul and anybody else who believes the same thing that Paul believes. And so he's forced at the end of the chapter to leave there. And that's where I want to pick up in chapter 20 and verse 1, is he makes his decision to leave Ephesus. It says, after the uproar had ceased, Paul sent for the disciples, and when he had exhorted them and taken his leave from them, he departed to go to Macedonia. And when he had gone through those districts and had given them much exhortation, he came to Greece. And there he spent 3 months, and when a plot was formed against him by the Jews, as he was about to set sail for Syria, he determined to return through Macedonia. You know, Paul may have been hated by the mob and by several people along the way. He no doubt made people dislike him and even hate him. But God's people always loved him. And that's something that he could always turn to. I want to find my people who are God's people, and I can find some encouragement through that. I'm sure when he made that decision to finally leave Ephesus, he was kind of torn on that decision. I got to leave these people. Again, at the end of chapter 20, we see him talking to the Ephesian elders. And we know how they're all leaving each other in tears, knowing that they're never going to see each other again. They loved each other. But Paul also understood, you know what, I've got to continue on. I've got to fulfill God's work. Specifically in this instance, he's at the beginning of his third missionary journey. And he's got to continue on that. And that's what we're going to be kind of looking at from this point, from Ephesus to Miletus this morning, and see some things that Paul did along the way to help him day by day by day continue steadfastly in the work of the Lord. Some things that we can add to our own selves. Like I said, if Paul teaches us anything, it's how to be steadfast, regardless of what you're going through. And so I want us to look at just a few of these things. Again, when you say Acts 20, you typically don't think about what we're going to be talking about today. There's a couple things that we specifically think about there. But I hope you'll stick with me this morning as we look through some of these things. The first thing that we see from Paul is that Paul understood a need to fellowship and to spend time with the brethren, with like-minded Christian people. Beginning at verse 7, or continuing verse 7, it says, and he was accompanied by Sopater of Berea, the son of Pyrrhus, and by Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy, and Tychicus, and Trophimus of Asia. But these had gone on ahead and were waiting for us in Troas. And we sailed for Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and came to them at Troas within 5 days. And there we stayed 7 days. And on the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to depart the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. And so in verse 4, we see some men who accompanied Paul, men who now, no doubt were encouraging him along the way and supporting him in the things that he was doing. If you look in the past, in the scriptures, you can see almost all of these same men. I think the Sopater of Berea is the only one that is only mentioned here. But everybody else is mentioned in other places as still being with Paul and suffering with Paul, standing shoulder to shoulder with Paul through the good things and the fight, or the good things that are happening, but also through the fights. These things, they're there to support him. These are godly men that he has associated himself with. But when you go to verses 6 and 7, we also see that when they get to Troas, they don't just sit here and say, well, we're good, we've already got some Christians here with us. No, when they got to Troas, they went and found more Christians. And we see on the first day of the week, them worshiping together and having fellowship with one another in their worship, fellow Christians alike. We also see them staying there for 7 days. Who do you think they were spending time with during those 7 days? I got a pretty good idea. It wasn't just those people in the world. Surely they were talking to them and teaching them, but they were surrounding themselves by fellow Christians as well. And so that's something very important for them. When you look at this word fellowship, if you're not familiar with that, again, that's that Greek word koinonia, which means a partnership or communion with someone. This is something that's very important or vital to the lives of Christians. Having something in common with someone and sharing that together. Obviously, the thing that we have in common with one another is that common obedience and belief to God's Word. The same thing that Cliff just prayed about a minute ago, where he said, when we're obedient to your Word, we have the forgiveness of sins. That's a fellowship also that we have with Christ. I can have my sins forgiven because of my relationship. And you can have your sins forgiven. And because of that relationship, we can have fellowship with one another. Go and turn over to 1 John chapter 1. We'll read about that here in a second. But we see that relationship here is first and foremost with God. Because we've got that relationship with Him, therefore we can have the relationship with one another. And it's not something that we can have with everybody. This word fellowship is used in multiple different ways here in the time that we live in. But when we're talking about Bible fellowship, this is something that goes back to God. And so in 1 John chapter 1 and verse 3, John says, "What have we seen, or what we have seen and heard, proclaim to you also, that you also may have fellowship with us, and indeed our fellowship is with the Father and with the Son, Jesus Christ. And these things we write so that our joy may be made complete. And this is the message we have heard from him and announced to you, that God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him, and yet walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. But if we walk in the light as he himself is in the light, we have fellowship with one another. And the blood of Jesus, his Son, cleanses us from all sins." And so we see that we can't have fellowship with one another unless we have that relationship with God. There's other passages we can look at, such as Philippians chapter 1 and verse 3, where Paul describes his fellowship by saying, "I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always offering prayer and joy in every prayer for you all, in view of your participation," or as the your version may say, "of the fellowship of the gospel from the first day until now." In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 9, he again writes, it says, "God is faithful, through whom we were called into fellowship with his Son, Christ Jesus our Lord." And so this is the thing, you know, knowing that fellowship is with God, and the only reason that we can have that fellowship is because of that relationship, why would Christians not want to spend more time with fellow Christians? I don't understand that. I've never understood that in all of my life, why Christians, those who strive to have a relationship with God, don't want to be with those who also strive to have a relationship with God. It doesn't make sense. Wouldn't we want to be with like-minded people who are trying to get to heaven just as we are? Those who are trying to live their life in a godly manner? Those who can help us along the way and we can help them along the way? It just makes sense that we would want to have that fellowship all the way around. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. As you look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, we see that Paul, he applauded the Thessalonian brethren for having this kind of relationship with one another. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 9, he says, "Now as to the love of the brethren, we have no need for anyone to write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another." Verse 10, "For indeed you do practice it towards all the brethren who are in Macedonia, but we urge you, brethren, to excel still more." These people had love down to a T. They loved one another. They no doubt had that same fellowship with one another, specifically as they worshiped. That's the fellowship that they have with God and communing with one another. But it wasn't just something that they had just for the people in Thessalonica. These people, as he says here, you've spread that out all the way over around Macedonia. You weren't just, okay, well, this is our little group and we're going to stick to our group. They went out to the surrounding towns. And they shared in that same love and fellowship with other people who loved God and desired to obey Him, who also had fellowship with God. That was something that was important to them, and they were being applauded for doing that. Now, does that mean that we ostracize ourselves and we separate ourselves from the world? Well, no, that doesn't mean that either. I'm not saying we need to make a little community of just Christians here. Sometimes that would be nice, but that's not what we're supposed to do. Paul himself said, you know what, I can't leave the world. I've got to be in the world, but I shouldn't be of the world. We have a responsibility given to us to go out into the world and to teach and to be examples to others, to help them out and share that love with them as well. Does that mean we have fellowship with them? Nope. Not unless fellowship is with God. Remember, we don't establish that. They establish that with God. But if we've both got it, then we can have fellowship with one another. But again, here in Galatians chapter 6, we're reminded that we are to also be reaching out to those in the world there when Paul says in verse 10, "So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, and especially of those who are of the household of faith." You know, it's not just something that we are supposed to do, but it's also a very good thing and a mutually beneficial thing for us to spend our time with fellow believers, with Christians. One, there's that aspect of accountability. You know what? If I'm going to spend my time with those in the world, who's going to keep me accountable except for myself? But if I surround myself with other Christians, and they're the ones who always see what I'm doing, they hear what I'm saying, they start seeing trends in my life, guess what? That's going to help me to be accountable. But it's also going to help me to have that, to be able to learn things from them in an atmosphere besides this, kind of an informal kind of atmosphere. I have worked with Christians throughout my life, and I have learned so much more about them not sitting in a pew, not talking here at the building, but going and eating meals with them and going and talking with them and doing different things with them. You find things about other people, and that can help us out. I think about what Solomon wrote there in Proverbs 27, verse 17. Iron sharpens our iron, so one man sharpens another. I'm sorry, I've got behind on my PowerPoint again. We need that. We need to have that sharpening of ourselves. Okay, we've got the accountability factor where we've got that we can learn from others in these kinds of settings. You also, when we're together, we can start to discover what other people need. How can we bless other people? How can we help you? I'm not going to know that until I have a relationship with you. I don't like having things up here. You know, I put the who's sick and things like that. I don't like that. I don't know. There's something up there and we've seen who's sick and then the announcements come up and, oh, we didn't know about that. I didn't know that someone else was sick. I didn't know that someone else was suffering in this way. And we find out through announcements because we don't interact with each other enough. You know, there's certain things that come up, you know, relatively quickly, but we should be able to know these things about each other because have a great relationship. And that's lacking. It's lacking. I'll be quite honest with you. I'm not going to try to make everybody feel happy about themselves and when there's things that we need to do better on. We need to do better with getting together and spending time as God's people. But again, if we're not spending time together, we're not going to know what each other needs and how we can bless one another and pray for one another, encourage one another. It takes away the vulnerability aspect of it. I don't have to tell you my shortcomings, and so therefore you're not praying with me. We need to know those things. You know, when I read about people having all things in common, I know they're talking about the physical things, but they also talk about the spiritual things. And we need to be able to know these things about each other so we can help each other and pray for one another. But these are things I believe Paul understood and he took advantage of. And that's why he surrounded himself constantly with God's people. That's something he needed, and that's something that we needed, or that we need as we walk day by day by day. As you continue on in verse 7, we find a very important lesson from a man named Eutychus. The story I always, I guess it's kind of terrible, but I've always thought it was kind of fascinating when I was a kid, but let's read about Eutychus. He teaches us a great lesson about always being watchful and aware. In verse 7, it says, "On the first day of the week, when we were gathering together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to depart the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. And there were many lamps in the upper room where we were gathered together. And there was a certain young man named Eutychus sitting in the windowsill, sinking into deep sleep. And as Paul kept on talking, he was overcome by sleep and fell down from the third floor and was picked up dead. But Paul went down and fell upon him, and after embracing him, said, "Do not be troubled, for his life is in him." And when he had gone back up and had broken the bread and eaten, he talked with them a long while until daybreak, and so departed, and they took away the boy alive and were greatly comforted. Why did he fall asleep? You know, I don't know if it was past his bedtime. We already, you know, we know that he's up here late and he's a young man. Maybe it's past his bedtime. Maybe he's just not interested in what's being talked about. You know, it's kind of one of those things that a lot of young people, they're not interested in what's being talked about. And hopefully that changes as they've grown up. There's a lot of grown-ups who aren't interested in about what's being talked about. And that doesn't change as they grow up, unfortunately. But for some reason, he falls asleep while Paul's preaching. I have some things to say about myself. I'll say that. I'll leave it right there. He falls asleep. He's not alert during this sermon. And it nearly costs him his life. I'm just going to say it. You know, I see a lot of things while I'm up here preaching. I've seen quite a few of you fall asleep. I'm not making judgments. I know there's a lot of things. I didn't get hardly any sleep last night myself. Some people are on medicines and things like that. If you fall asleep, I'm not going to judge you. I hope you don't. But you know what? I think about that when I read this story about people. Oh, somebody's preaching. I'm going to fall asleep again. But anyway, if I don't say that, I'm not ever going to get it out of my head. But this serves as an illustration for us. An unfortunate illustration that, you know what? Sadly, many people who call themselves Christian are doing nothing more than sleeping through their life, spiritually. They've fallen asleep. You know, we've all heard the phrase, falling asleep at the wheel. Maybe you have fallen asleep at the wheel. I know I've done it more times than I care to admit. It's a scary thing, but what about falling asleep at the wheel spiritually? Do we ever consider that? I would suggest to you that we do that specifically whenever we approach Christianity just going through the motions, checking off that box. Well, I went where I was supposed to, I did what I was supposed to, therefore I must be a good Christian. But the problem is we approach these things without any kind of zeal, without any kind of fervency, no urgency in the things that we do, and we might as well just be sleeping. You know, that would fit a lot of the so-called doctrine of today that, well, I've checked all the boxes and therefore I'm good. But that's not what we see in the Bible. We don't ever see Christianity being something that you do it and you're done. You can sit back and you relax. Quite to the contrary, Jesus talks about a man who, that rich farmer, remember? Oh, I've done this, let me eat, sleep, and be merry. I've done all these things and I'm good. And he says, "You fool, your soul is expected of you tonight. Whose are all these things that you've been working for? Who are they going to belong to? You were a fool in these things. You sat back and you did the things that weren't right." We got to be careful that we don't fall into that kind of thing. We don't sleepwalk our way through life and then call ourselves Christians. The Christians I read about in the Bible are those who are active and those who are sacrificing of themselves and doing everything they can for God and not for himself. Again, as Eutychus found out on a physical level, this can be a very dangerous thing. Over in Matthew chapter 26, we see others in the Bible who also were sleeping when they should have been doing other things. Specifically in this instance, Jesus is preparing for to be arrested and crucified. And he goes and he prays in the garden. In verse 28, or 38 rather, he tells those disciples with him, "Remain here and keep watch with me." That was their instruction. Stay here, watch, wait. And then verse 40, though, it says, "And he came to his disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, you men could not keep watch with me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you do not slip into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away again a second time and prayed and said, "My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done." Verse 43, "Again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them again and went away and prayed a third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand.'" Can you imagine that? Jesus is mere hours away from being crucified. In the last moments that they have with the Son of God here on earth, they're sleeping through it. That's a shameful thing. But again, what about us? How are we sleeping through our spiritual lives? You know, we're in our last hours right now. Maybe. Maybe not. But are we living like we're dying? Are we living like these are the last hours of my life? These are the last opportunities while I'm here on this earth to serve God. And that's how we're living our life and approaching our lives. It should be. It should be. But unfortunately, we may be sleeping as well. Again, the Bible is full of passages and words that warn us and encourage us not to waste these last few moments of our spiritual lives. Again, Jesus talked about some of these same ones as he's rebuking the disciples when he finds them sleeping. But just very quickly, some of these words like sober and vigilant, alert and watchful are the words that describe a Christian who's doing what they're supposed to do. I'm going to have these up here. I'm going to go through them real quick, so you probably won't have time to turn, but if you'd like to try, then I'll be happy to listen to your pages turn. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 34, he says, "Become sober-minded as you ought, and stop sinning. For some have no knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame." Chapter 16 and verse 13, he says again, "Be on the alert. Stand firm in the faith. Act like men," or "be brave," as your version may say. "Be strong." 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 6, "So then let us not sleep as others do, but let us be alert and sober." In 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 5, he says to young Timothy there, "But you be sober in all things, endure hardship, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry." We could go back and read the verses right before that and him talk about, these are the things you're going to face, young Timothy. There's going to be people that have itching ears. They want to hear all the false doctrine that makes them feel good about themselves. They want to hear the things that don't convict them of their sins. They want to find somebody who's going to teach that kind of stuff. But you be sober. You wake up. You stop. You don't live like they do. They're sleeping spiritually. You be awake. It's basically what he's telling young Timothy to do. But then also Peter talks about this in 1 Peter chapter 5, probably the more familiar passage where we're talking about being sober and vigilant. In verses 8 and 9 he says, "But be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary the devil prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour." Who is he seeking? He's seeking you. He's seeking, really, he's going to take the easy prey first, those who are sleeping. But he's saying he's seeking someone to devour. We've always got to see that as ourselves. "But resist him, firm in the faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world." You think Paul understood those words there, as he said at the end? That all these brethren around the world are suffering in these kinds of things? He saw it. As he went around on his journeys, he saw suffering in all different kinds of ways. And so as he's saying these things, yes, it's inspired, but he also witnessed these things firsthand and experienced them himself as well. But again, the scriptures are crystal clear that Christianity is an active thing. It is a watchful role that we need to be. It's not one that we just kind of go through the motions of. But that's what Christianity is to a lot of people. And that's not right. Again, Jesus rebuked those who did that. Anyway. But again, the story of Eutychus is a good reminder for us of the danger of that, but also the terrible things that can happen when we're not watchful and aware of things as we ought to be. You know, if Eutychus had known that he was going to fall out of that window, I guarantee you he would have done everything he could not to fall out of that window. If he had been watchful and aware, he would have likely not fallen out of that window. But the thing was, he was caught off guard. And he was hitting the ground before he knew what was happening. Have you ever had that dream? I've had that dream or nightmare several times in my life where you finally doze off and you wake up because you're falling in your dream. And, you know, and you're grasping for everything you can because what's just happening? Your heart's going crazy and, oh, it's just a dream. I'm glad I'm not falling out of that. That's a dream that he didn't get to, it wasn't a dream for him. He literally woke up, I'm sure, as he was falling and then crashed and fell back asleep. You know, but it's a reminder for us that can happen to us very quickly. Before we even realize it, if we're not paying attention, we can fall victim to temptation ourselves. And it should terrify us that that's happening. But we got to be aware, we got to be awake. But again, like Eutychus reminds us, this our sin, our lack of watchfulness can be very harmful to us as well. You know, Eutychus' life was spared that day. But do you ever think about him past that one instance? What about in the next week? You know, I have no doubt that he was sore physically in the next week. You can't fall three stories and not be hurt. But what about the rest of it? When I think of Eutychus, you know, I bet you his pride was hurt worse than his body was. Who would ever want to be known as the guy who fell asleep and fell out of a window? You don't live that down the next day. Much less you're the guy who fell asleep and fell out of the window during the sermon. How do you go to church after that? Oh, let's make it even better. You're the one who fell asleep and fell out of the window during the sermon, and Paul was the one preaching. That's a gospel meeting that no one's going to forget about. But that's Eutychus. He had to live with that. And guess what? 2,000 years later, people are still talking about Eutychus. He's dead, and we're still talking about him, the guy that fell out of the window during a sermon. It caught him off guard, and he's got repercussions until Jesus comes again. He's got the physical aspect. We can see the spiritual aspect of that because he wasn't paying attention. If Eutychus had been watching, chances are he wouldn't have fallen out of the window. Guess what? If we're watching and we're alert, chances are we're not going to give in to temptation as easily as we would either. There's application to be made from that for us as well. As we continue, though, into our text here, we see another lesson that Paul reminds us beginning in verse 13, and that is that we need to take it one day at a time. Take life one day at a time. Verse 13, he says, "But we, going ahead to the ship, set sail for Assos, intending from there to take Paul on board. For he had arranged it, intending himself to go by land. And when he met us at Assos, we took him on board and came to Mytilene." Why did Paul set up travel plans for everyone else to go on a boat and then leave himself alone to walk the way? You look at the map, it's a tiny, tiny bit. It wasn't like it was a huge, long thing. Maybe a mile is what it looks like. I don't know. Why would he put everybody else on a boat and then him say, "Y'all, I'll catch up with you. I'm going to go by myself. I'm going to walk." You know, there's lots of reasons. We're not told exactly why he did that. Maybe it was because I've got some people to see along the way. I've got something I need to do. Maybe I'm tired of boats, because he didn't have the greatest luck with boats, as we know. I think if I had to give you one reason why he decided to go by himself by foot, is he wanted to spend a little time with God. That's a perfect time to get away and to have a little talk with your Lord, to find a little comfort in Him. I think that's probably what he did. It makes a lot of sense in my mind, at least. You know, he's not the only one who did this. We find several people who separated themselves to go and spend some time with God. Jesus did it multiple times. Remember, he sent people on a boat as well. He sent his disciples, "Y'all go out on the boat." And he went off by himself and he prayed. That's the time before he went and walked out to them on the boat, when Peter went and walked on water for a moment. We see in the garden, he said, "Y'all stay here and watch, and I'm going to go and I'm going to pray." Taking time by himself to go pray. It's not something that Paul did only. Many people did that. You know, it's something that's vital for us to not just take the time to go talk to God, but to make the time to get away from everything else to spend some time with God. You know, I've talked to someone specifically in this congregation who does this regularly, gets out in the woods and just gets away from everything. Time to read your Bible, time to talk to God. We need to make the time to do those kinds of things. Our spiritual life, our spiritual self will thank us for doing that. It's a valuable thing that we need to be doing. If you don't already have that regular time set up, I would highly encourage you to do that. We need to be doing those things. Paul thought it was important for him to get away and do things like that. But as we go one more time, let's go ahead. Philippians chapter 4. When we do this, when we do take the time to talk to God, again, the importance of prayer that Paul talks about here, this peace and this comfort that comes through our prayer and getting away and talking to God is absolutely invaluable. And Paul talks about that again, Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Verse 7, and the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension or understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Don't underestimate the power of talking to God, to laying things on Him. There's a great comfort that we can't even understand that comes through that, but we need to make time to do that. All right, now going that extra step into verse 15. Read with me here. And that is that Paul took one day at a time. In verse 15, he says, sailing from there, we arrived the following day opposite Chios. The next day, we crossed over to Samos. And the day following, we came to Miletus. Typically, when I would read that, I would read over that and be done with it. But as I was looking at different things, someone had pointed that verse out by itself, and it really made me stop and think. What do we see in this verse? Three times there, as I've got it underlined, he says the following day, or the next day, or the day after that, depending on your version, however it says there. What does that tell you? I'll tell you what it tells me. It tells me, as strong and powerful as Paul was as an apostle, he was a mighty apostle. He was brave. He spoke boldly and did so many things. He was very active. But that tells me even Paul couldn't do everything that he needed to in one day. And if he can't do it, I sure can't. I can't do everything that I want to do for God in one day. We live in this kind of time where it's like we get so impatient, we want everything now, and I want to do everything now, and I've got projects at home that are just stacking up. I want to get to them, but I just don't have enough time in the day. But spiritually, that applies as well. We can't do everything in one day. And so what does that tell us? I need to spend every day that I have trying to do more for God. I need to spend every step that I've got to walk closer to God. I need to spend all my energy in doing spiritual, godly things. As long as I'm blessed with a day and a step and some energy, I need to use them for God, to be doing His work. You know, again, that's the whole reason I named the title of this sermon the way it is, day by day by day. It's not just one day. It's not just 2 days. It's one day after another day. And as many days as we are blessed with until our days run out, do the work for the Lord. As it was said one time, Christianity isn't a race, it's a marathon. You gotta pace yourself. Keep going every day, get up and take another step. Take another step, do more work for the Lord. As I said at the beginning of the lesson, these aren't typically things that we talk about whenever we look at Acts chapter 20. Acts 20 verse 7 is where most people go when they go to Acts 20. On the first day of the week when they came together to break bread. That's a very important verse. It establishes a lot of things. Some people will go to the end of the letter where, again, as Paul's talking to the Ephesian brethren and talking about the kind of relationship they had and talking about Paul's work ethic, that night and day, for all those years, he spent teaching them and he never held back anything from them. We look at those kind of things usually when we look at Acts chapter 20, but I hope the things that we talked about this morning will also be beneficial to us. That they can be things that we can add to our own lives, because we can do more. But it's got to be a daily, by day, by day, by day kind of thing. Again, we need to spend more time in fellowship with one another more. We need to approach our spiritual life with an attitude of alertness and watchfulness. We need to, again, make time to be with God and spend time with Him. We need to grow as Christians day by day by day. So I hope this will be an encouragement for you this week, something to think about, something a little bit different in Acts chapter 20. I appreciate your attention this morning. Go ahead and open up to number 320. Will Jesus find us watching? As always, the Lord's invitation is open to everyone, open to us at all times. But if you look at your life and maybe you see some things, maybe from this lesson, maybe from other things that you've been studying, that there's something missing in your life. I hope that you'll take this time to make it right. If you owe some duty to the Lord, maybe you're not a child of God this morning, I hope that you'll do what's necessary before it's too late. Don't be the one who waits until the last second and then you've missed your opportunity to say, well, I guess I should have done that. don't spend eternity saying, I could have and I should have, but I didn't. I hope that if you have something that you need to take care of this morning, that you will take care of that. If we can help you with that, though, if you'll come at this time while we stand and sing.